I'm Jim Fleming, and this is the podcast of one segment from To the Best of Our Knowledge, Public Radio's Peabody Award-winning magazine of ideas from PRI, Public Radio International, and Wisconsin Public Radio.
Support for this public radio podcast comes from Acura, featuring the completely redesigned 300-horsepower MDX. More information is available at Acura.com.
In February 1945, Kurt Vonnegut was among some American POWs hiding in a cellar during the firebombing of Dresden. 135,000 people died that night. During the bombing, one soldier said, "I wonder what the poor people are doing tonight." Nobody laughed. But as Vonnegut tells the story, everyone was grateful he said it. This week's excerpt from To the Best of Our Knowledge comes from a program in which we'll talk with Vonnegut about humor for desperate times. The most famous literary account of the World War II firebombing is Slaughterhouse-Five, Kurt Vonnegut's searing story of the bombing of Dresden. By now, Vonnegut is one of the grand old men of American letters, but he feels out of place in today's world, as the title of his most recent book suggests. It's called A Man Without a Country. Vonnegut is still horrified by modern warfare, but like his literary hero Mark Twain, he tries to find humor in troubled times. Steve Paulson talked with Kurt Vonnegut shortly after his 83rd birthday.
You've always been a humorist who's found something funny beneath the horror that you've written about. Do you still find much humor in the world?
Well, not really. It's a response to a very troubling situation. I don't think there would be many jokes if there wasn't constant frustration and fear and so forth. It's a response to bad troubles, like crying.
So the worse the situation, the better the humor?
Yes, I think so.
Now you have often invoked Mark Twain, and
yes,
you do that again in this book, and you say that he thought life was quite awful, but he held the awfulness at bay with jokes until finally he couldn't do it anymore.
Well, that's right. His two of his beloved daughters died, and his wife died, and his best friend died, and so he came to not like life at all. And he died in 1910. He didn't even see the First World War, the worst war ever for soldiers. Of course, that war was about absolutely nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Just the willingness to fight. And it was made particularly exciting by three American inventions: the machine gun, barbed wire, and the airplane.
Now, we were talking earlier about the power of humor, especially in desperate times. And
you
give one example that I found very poignant. When you were hiding in the cellar during the 1945 firebombing of Dresden, there was another soldier who said, "I wonder what the poor people are doing tonight."
Yes. I mean, we were hungry. We were cold. And these bombs, this was in the daytime. The Americans bombed in the daytime. The Brits bombed at night. But these sticks of bombs, you know, were walking overhead, either away from us or toward us or whatever. Boom, boom, boom. And so our case was quite hopeless, I thought. And he said, as though he were a duchess, a well-fed duchess in a grand, cozy manner, on a terrible stormy night, saying, "I wonder what the poor people are doing tonight." And nobody laughed, but everybody was glad he said it because it proved we were still alive.
Hmm. Everyone was maybe laughing a little bit inside.
Oh, I think so. But again, laughter is, you know, people hate it when they're tickled because laughter is not pleasant if it goes on too long. And so I think it's a desperate sort of convulsion in desperate circumstances, which helps a little.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you finally wrote about your experience in Dresden, that was in your novel Slaughterhouse-Five, which came out more than two decades after the actual experience, you say that you had finally grown up enough to write about the bombing of Dresden, which killed, you know, more than 100,000 people in one night. What do you mean that you had finally grown up enough?
Well, because I was head of a family and supporting them with writing. And I was tempted, in fact, because I wanted money, to write, you know, a funny story about American POWs in Dresden, and you know, it would be John Wayne, it'd be Frank Sinatra, it'd be Dean Martin, and, you know, ha ha ha, and saying funny stuff and everything. And finally, the wife of one of my fellow survivors blew up at me when she heard I was going to write a book about Dresden, and she said, "You were just babies then." And that's true. Hmm. We weren't Duke Wayne, and we weren't Frank Sinatra. So that was the truth. And I could take it from there that we were all children, essentially, you know, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, instead of really tough guys. Not that we were cowards.
So that's interesting. So for that story to work for you, you had to think of yourself as babies.
Yes, and to tell the truth, for goodness sake. As I still could have written that novel for John Wayne and Sinatra and Dean Martin, and it would have been a pretty funny movie, I think. I don't know, but I finally decided, hell, I'm going to tell the truth.
And you couldn't have told the truth when you were younger.
I didn't know. I wasn't ready to face the truth. The guy who I visited to ask him, hey, tell me, let's help me remember funny stuff. We were prisoners of war. This was before his wife blew up. He was my particular infantry buddy. We were both privates first class, and we were both battalion scouts. And in the infantry, as you pair off with somebody else, essentially marry him, and the two of you look out for each other. I said to him, well, what did you learn? And he said, I will never believe my government again. It had been so important to him to think that ours wasn't the sort of government that would bomb civilians, kill women, men, women, and children, because that's what the bad guys were.
Mm-hmm.
And we could have won the war without doing that.
And the bombing of Dresden really had no strategic purpose. I mean, it was just to scare the hell out of people.
No, in lectures, I would say, you know, the war was almost over. It was February, and the war ended in May. And the Germans were already in full retreat on all fronts. And there was this beautiful untouched city. It was called the Florence of the Elbe, and it was as beautiful as Paris or as Florence. And it was unprotected. And Germans hoped it would be regarded as an open city. And there were no war industries there, virtually none, and no air raid shelters. As we were lucky, we survived because we were in a slaughterhouse and there were meat lockers underneath. But no, it did nothing except finally be an embarrassment that we would do such a thing. It was largely a British atrocity, may I say. We just came along in the daytime to discourage the firemen dropping high explosives. And, of course, the world changed so radically because very soon we would drop atomic bombs on civilians in Hiroshima and Nagasaki. You know, you talk about these crazy people wrapped in high explosives at terrorists or whatever. You know, these guys are so bad they might set off an A-bomb in our midst. Well, only one country has ever done that, and that was us.
Mm-hmm.
Really quite something, just vaporizing men, women, and children. And I would say that was, after human slavery, that is the most racist act of this country in our history.
Kurt Vonnegut spoke with Steve Paulson. Vonnegut's many books include Slaughterhouse-Five, Cat's Cradle, and most recently, A Man Without a Country. You've been listening to a segment from PRI's To the Best of Our Knowledge, Public Radio's Peabody Award-winning magazine of ideas. If you would like to hear the program in its entirety, visit ttbook.org or check with your local public radio station. You can also download the entire hour at audible.com/ttbook.